Yay! Okay, I love you. Bye.
Okay, I love you. Bye. Have a great episode.
Thank you.
You guys are so cute.
Shut up.
Love it.
All right, I'm going to go watch anime really loud.
Okay. So I'm going to wait to start until after you close the door.
Yeah, okay.
He's so big in that hallway.
I am stompy.
You guys have all those Crocs. I put them on your desk.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Do you see them? Okay, good. All right, Darlene. I got you mid-sip. Right after...
So funny.
Right after my partner ran away, after he set everything up. You do a lot. You're an artist, you're a curator, you plan creative events.
Oh my gosh.
You studied history. I don't know if I should also call you a historian.
I call myself a historian. Okay. So let's run with it.
All right.
Yeah.
It's not something that you get certified for. It's just...
My degree is in historical studies.
So, yes. Yeah. I noticed that.
Yeah. So technically I am.
So when do you sleep?
I'm not sure yet.
You're also a mother.
I'm not sure yet. I'm still figuring out what sleep is and what that looks like. It'll happen sometime, you know.
That's the most cliched question.
Yeah.
Is when does a mother sleep?
Yeah, I know, but it's true. There's not a lot of time in the day. People are always asking me if I'm going to make it to certain places or certain things. And I have to say, you know, maybe. Every single time. And because my kid has a schedule and I have a schedule, and you kind of have to do what you can when you can. And I'm never going to miss anything for her. Mm. Like, you know, if it's really important, if it's something that she really, you know, would love to see me at, I'm going to miss whatever is on the plate for me to be there for her.
What would a 4-year-old miss you at?
Oh my gosh. So she's been in gymnastics for 3 years.
Oh.
And she's really good. She's tested into a class now, her third year. She's tested into a tumbling class. So you can't just enroll into it. You have to work up and your way into it.
You can't just enroll.
Exactly. And she may be joining competition in a few months. So yeah, so there's, you know, whenever they have they're big. Look at what I did for the year. They call it the Mini Olympics.
Because they're tiny.
They're tiny and they get a medal and they show off their things. Or, I don't know, she has school talent shows and they do pageants and things like that. Her school also does...
pageants?
Yeah, like holiday pageants where they're singing and performing.
I thought you meant beauty pageants.
No, I don't really want to take that route.
Yes, no, not that young.
Not that young. But yeah, just anything where she's, you know, showcasing who she is.
Yeah.
Her school has also had fashion shows where the theme was, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
And she dressed up as an astronaut last year. So things like that. It's wherever.
Wait, did you make the costume?
I did not make it. which I would have if I had the time, but no, we just bought it. And
okay.
With the help, she had gotten a helmet from, what is the museum? I'm forgetting the name of it.
Children's Museum, Brooklyn Museum.
Intrepid.
Oh!
We got... I'm like, wait, no, it's on
I never would have guessed that one.
I know, it's so random, but they had an exhibition where they were showcasing the first United States sponsored spaceship, and it was watching everything having to do with the first Apollos and all of these, the very first spaceship was, space suit was there, ever made on this
plane. Speaking of sponsor, before I forget, so we're drinking coffee.
It's delicious.
There's a little bit of cheating going on with some bodega stuff. Not bodega, fancier than that. But what I'm drinking pure, straight up, is fresh roasted coffee, pumpkin spice, apple crumb cake, and pecan pie. Gonna leave those there.
I'm gonna take them with me.
Yes, you're gonna hold back.
When I leave, I'm taking them with me.
So you have the mixed stuff.
I have the mixed stuff.
With whatever you brought, and then some of this.
Yeah.
And I'm drinking it without cream, because that's my life right now.
I love that. Sometimes you need just a black coffee.
Yes.
It's probably healthier.
It has fewer calories.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to be more acidic, though.
Oh.
So that's not good.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I'll live. Okay, so you've been an art educator too, just speaking of school stuff for related to your kid.
Over 10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think
about. So how do you, this is something I know I've struggled with in the past. How do you bring together your art practice and your education, mm-hmm. your work as an educator, mm-hmm. and then how do you keep those things separate? And, like, in what ways are you okay with them intersecting, mm-hmm. and in what ways do you know they have to be separate?
I mean, there is some interwovenness that happens. As an arts educator, you can't help but do art with the kids. Like, with it, you know, I'm teaching a class, I'm always going to be hands-on. I'm always going to do the project with the kids. And it's so fun having that time, because then it feels... creating feels freer and less like structured and with an end result. like, you know, you're painting with kids or you're drawing with kids. It's like, yeah. It's really more about the process than whatever you make. And it's not like I'm making something that has to be like sold or whatever. I'm just having
fun. Can't obsess over
exactly.
the final result.
You can't obsess over the final result. So I enjoy like having that time, to create freer. And you know, as a artist, as a creative, it's easy to, you know, we have this end goal where we still want people to see our work and or buy the work.
Yeah.
And so to be able to create with students, and even if I'm teaching an adult class, sometimes I do, and yeah, just being able to freely create, so it's nice to have that where I'm creating all the time. But there is, you know, I try to keep the world separate as much as I can. But I do invite people, I invite parents, I invite, you know, to see my work when it's showing in galleries or in residencies and things like that.
And you've shown a lot.
I show a lot.
You have.
It's crazy. I actually am showing tomorrow.
Which is when, because this won't actually be posted tomorrow.
That's okay. So this will already be, this will all probably already be over by the time this posts. But the work will be up for about 3 weeks. And this is my third exhibition in 2 weeks.
What? I think. Where is it? What is it?
What's so this happening? One is the Bridgehampton Center in Bridgehampton, New York.
Fancy.
Out of the Hamptons.
What?
Yeah. I have four works on display there, and it's the closing reception for the Black Film Festival in the Hamptons, and which marks the beginning of this exhibition. So this work is on display for their closing event, and then the work will be up for about 3 weeks.
And what's the content, or what does the work look like?
I have four pieces from my In Search of Black Wonderlust series, which focused on people of color who had ancestors who were enslaved during the transatlantic slave trade. And they are from various different cultures, not just Black Americans, but, you know, Puerto Rican, Nigerian American now. And just sharing the stories of these four people through portraiture. And that work is hanging there the end of November, or December 1st, I think, is the last day it'll be up.
When did you start making art?
When I was like maybe 4 or 5.
I don't know. When you were the same age as your kid is now.
Yeah, same age as my kid now. She made her very first painting at 6 months old.
Oh.
She set her down. One of my cousins sent me some paint that's made out of vegetables. And so it's like powder that you have to mix with water. And we put her in front of the canvas so that there's no like toxicity happening, and she could just freely do whatever. And she sat, my little baby, and
aww.
Yeah. Since now she's like grown as an artist. But anyway, that's about her. This is about you. back to me.
Okay.
I've been creating for a very long time. I started creating... like, just freely fun, drawing things on the bus, drawing people I saw, never taking it seriously until about 2011, 2012, I had a sister who passed away.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Thank you, thank you. I grieved for a very long time, really hard. And I had a partner at the time who had gone to art school. And he was like, here are my paints, here's some brushes, paint your feelings. Mm. And it was extremely therapeutic, and I loved it. Like, I created, you know, I don't even know how many works of art at that time. Many people now own those pieces, but I gifted them away. But then I had people asking me if I would sell work, like if I would make things that they could purchase. Hmm. So I was like, oh, I can actually make money. I can really make money doing this. Growing up as a kid, I was always told you couldn't make money.
Right.
So I never like pursued it. And then I had to be about 23 or 24. And I was like, oh, I can make money now. Like, mm-hmm. people want to, they're asking me if I will make this work. So then I started on this journey trying to figure out what type of artist I wanted to be. And
I want to back up a little bit. So when you were drawing during that grieving process, mm-hmm. and I also understand grief doesn't ever really end.
Yeah, no.
It just changes in some ways, or your relationship to it changes. Were you drawing your sister, or were things less literal than that?
They were definitely less literal and super abstract. Mm. Very much just my feelings. They were just fluid strokes of how I felt, just getting the feelings out. And I did that for maybe about a year of just whenever I felt, instead of holding it in, I would just sit down and just go. And I didn't know materials the same way that I know now. I am self-taught, which people are always surprised to hear when they see my work.
Especially your graphite drawings.
Yeah, thank you. It's just sitting and learning the materials in my own time. And teaching those classes is a great opportunity for me to practice like new materials. I'm having to teach other people different things, so then I have to teach myself. But yeah, they were just really my emotions. I was painting what I felt. And then I realized I really wanted to paint people.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, maybe around 2015, I started just painting the people that I knew. Small scale, nothing crazy, just my friends for fun. And then I began wanting to share more about the people that I was meeting. Yeah. I'm like, I really want to, you know, I don't know. I just thought that every person that I meet is important.
Meaning where? Just anywhere in life?
The people close to me.
Okay.
Friends, people, you know, you cross paths with some, you know, it'd be like you go to the bodega, the same bodega every day. Hey, can I paint you? Like that type of thing. And I really became influenced by like old photo albums. Like as a kid, I loved looking through my mom's photo albums. Like, who is this person? Who is that person? And then you see, you know, a lot, especially on Instagram now, you can see like images from the 1800s and 1700s. And I'm always like, what's the story behind these people?
When you were studying history in school, in college, would you work with archival photography? Were you
not really? Yeah. Actually,
that does surprise me.
I haven't actually. I didn't when I was in school. It was more just learning the histories of people, learning the histories of America specifically, and how various cultures fit into the American landscape. Mm-hmm. And you'd see images in these books from different people, different time periods. Different experiences, immigrants from all over the world in the history books. So looking at those images is probably as far as I got. But they definitely influenced me to want to tell the stories of the people around me. To be, I guess, kind of like a modern day historian where, and I say modern day meaning like I'm focused on the people that are existing around me now. So taking the idea of like people I'm meeting every day, spending time with on a daily, or just passing, or had a great conversation with. I sat down at a restaurant and this person just really intrigues me. I need to know what more about them. Why are they important? Why did they cross my path? You know, so I want to tell those stories the way that the history books told them about the people in the photos. And sometimes in those photos, you only get, like, this is a person who lived in 1912. Yeah. And they might have been a worker. And yeah. this, you know,
no
this
real industry, story.
No real story. And so I wanted to share, like, real stories about people today and where they came from and who they came from. And just started developing my practice from there, fusing my academic career of history into art and using the things that I learned, like how to search for primary sources, how to, you know, like how to legitimize the work, how to use various archives, how to differentiate between fact and opinion.
You must have been a good student.
I graduated
magna cum laude. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And I would have been like, one B.
No.
Yeah. One B messed me up. But
whatever. Cool. Was it a math class?
No, I actually did. So I have a great story about the math. I took a math and art class.
What?
Which taught me about the, what is it? The
Fibonacci sequence
and the law of it's like why all art is beautiful. I was just talking about this
beautiful.
The other day.
Okay.
Or why certain art pieces or certain architecture is beautiful. It's like the I would literally
this will be a footnote.
Yeah,
this will be on the screen.
I was just talking about this last week, but I started using it within my work, like mapping it out, like the mathematical dimensions before I actually put the portraits on the canvas.
Your math class was about this?
Yeah, it was like how art is infused in, like, or how math is used to make art.
What?
Yeah.
My math class wasn't like that.
It made it really fun. It was so fun. And it always stuck with me. But I always forget what it's called. I can draw it out now. But I can't remember the name of the mathematical. Sorry.
What was your B in?
That was, believe it or not, it was the history of sex in, like, Greek and Roman times or something like that. And I was just like, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Oh. The class wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be more art-based, and it was heavy in the literature of the time. And it focused a lot on, like male relationships.
I was going to say, it's about gay sex.
It was a lot about gay sex. He just jumped right in, and there wasn't, like, you know, women were there, but they were over here doing this. And so I was just, yeah, I got a B in that class.
Whatever.
I was really hurt too. Sorry. I was really, really hurt. I was like, gosh, but I struggled, like, to talk about it. Not that, you know, to talk about it.
That was your trauma.
Well, because I thought it was going to be more about the art of the time. Yeah. And it was very much about, like, laws and how they were represented within certain literature and the politics of the time and how.
Who designed this class? This was an undergrad class?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I still remember some of the papers I had to write. It was just insane. It wasn't like art heavy like I thought it was going to be. It was very much about, like, the politics of the time and how men's relationships were in the forefront and how their political relationships married with, like, their sexual interactions and things like that. And I was just like, gosh.
You're like, I have other things to do.
Like, where's the art here? If we're at least going to talk about, like, male and male, like, relationships, like, let's go deeper into the art and why it was, you know, portrayed the way it was on certain, you know, walls and, and pottery and things like that. No, we didn't do that.
It was all the stuff you didn't care about.
Yeah, it was like, this guy loved to talk about this, and he, like, I don't know. Yeah.
So the historical training and the art making, I can see how those dovetailed and you became a curator, which is how I know you through Enclave Arts Alliance, Dario Moore's. Yes, shout out. Dario Moore's organization, a nonprofit here in New York City. How did you find out about Enclave?
Initially, I found out about Enclave when I was in residency with EFA, the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts. And Dario came to visit as a professional like one of our professional development meetings, and he was the professional. And I was so intrigued by what he was doing, just talking about his organization and how he'd gotten there, how he developed it, where he wanted to take it. And I was really, really enthralled. But I didn't jump on the chance then to get to know him. I just like remembered, like, I was just really engaged in the conversations that we were having. And then like a year and a half later or something.
Isn't that like, long in the grand scheme of things.
Because EFA was last year, I believe. Yeah, 2024. So then maybe it was just a few months later.
Time has no meaning.
At some point, I saw that Enclave was having their residency on Governor's Island. They had to open a call. And I was like, well, why not? I didn't know if I would get it or I wouldn't get it. And I applied and I got it. And that began what has now become such a beautiful relationship. I love working with Dario. He's like my like little big brother. I learned so much from him.
We're all around the same age.
I'm like just a couple months older, I think. That's why I say my little big brother, because it's like I learned so much from him, but he's constantly telling me how he learned so much from me. And I love just the way that we bounce ideas off of each other. He calls me a thought partner, and I love that. and like just working with him and working with you. A little bit.
There hasn't been as much as I wanted, and that's because I've been all over the place.
Which is so cool, just watching you. And when I do get to meet with you and talk with you and pick your brain, you always give me something that I take with me. So
I try.
I appreciate that very much. But yeah, so that's how I got to know Enclave, and now I'm the curator in residence for Enclave Arts Alliance, and next year I'll be the lead curator.
Woo!
Taking over your position.
Yeah. Please, take it. I have too much on my plate.
All good.
But you will thrive.
Thank you.
So you are a transplant. You grew up in Georgia.
Born and raised.
And you have lived in New York for a while now.
Like 8 years.
Yeah.
It's
so
crazy.
How did you get involved in so many different artistic activities, many events, so many organizations? And what advice would you have to people who move here and are new and are maybe intimidated and crying?
Don't be intimidated. Do not be intimidated, or they will eat you alive. or at least don't show it. Do not show it. It's play dead. Okay. But no. Really, in Atlanta, I was very active in the arts there, and in like the pop culture scene.
What do you mean by that?
Like coming out of college, I did a lot of like promotions, working with like promotion companies for clubs and parties.
Hot Atlanta.
Getting to know like just the who's who in the city by doing that. Not just like the people who own the establishments, but the people who were responsible for curating the vibe, right? Mm. For curating the culture. I reached out to a friend of mine that I'd known from like parties. Mm. And I knew that he knew curators. And I did that a few times. I was, hey, I want to start showing work. I don't know how to start. Can you introduce me to people? And that's how I started like meeting more and more people in the arts.
Okay.
Scene.
Yeah.
There. And then when I decided to move here, I did my research.
Back to the history degree.
I did my research. I looked at things like income and where certain people were living who were within a certain economic bracket. To make sure it was something I could do.
Because
it was very expensive. And YouTube was amazing. When I say it was incredible, there are travel YouTubers who just go to various cities and I love this coffee shop. I love this street. I love this. And so I was just looking at hundreds of those videos from people who were either living here or had moved here. And what they were saying.
Wait, so how long in advance did you start preparing for the move?
Like a year and a half. Yeah. I decided I was going to move. I spent like maybe 2 or 3 months just YouTubing constantly, like, okay, how much money do I need to save to at least get myself situated for 3 to 6 months here, so that I wasn't just sleeping on a couch or like in a hostel or something like that. Not that those things aren't
but
a route for everyone is fine, whatever.
They're not super stable.
Exactly. And I want it to be where I didn't have to worry about a job for a little bit. So I wanted to give myself cushion. And after researching and seeing, okay, this is where people my age were. This is where, you know, certain arts events were happening. I realized Bushwick was that. And saved my money for a year, set a date. I booked an Airbnb for 6 months.
And 6 months?
6 months. Because I was like, I really, like... I want to make sure I'm okay.
Yeah.
Give myself time to find a job. Give myself time to figure out, okay, if I don't like this neighborhood, maybe I can move to somewhere else and have a little bit of cushion where I was, or, you know, spend a little bit of time just hanging out and exploring the city without feeling like pressed to,
gotta go to work, gotta deal with the boss.
Like, I didn't want all of that to start with. So, I planned, saved my money, booked an Airbnb for 6 months. And moved and straight into Bushwick. I've been in Bushwick since I moved here, basically. I think we lived in like what's considered Ocean Hill for like a month. Like,
I was there for 4 years
in Ocean Hill.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I survived. I'm here.
And just to, even to tell, so when we moved to that spot, they told us it was Bushwick. And they were like, this is Bushwick. And I'm like, oh, okay. Then I get here and I'm like, this is not Bushwick. Like, no. I, you know, figuring it out, I'm like, oh, this
it's
is not.
Close,
it's close. It's close, but this is not it. And so moved from there. And I've been in the same house for 7 years. I haven't moved. I love it. It's so much space that my kid has a room. You know what I mean? Like her own room.
What?
Wow. She, with play, like, she has a large room too.
So she can paint.
She can paint. She we have a gymnastics bar in her room, so she does flips and she practices like all of those things in her space. She's a tent. She has so many things. But yeah, I prepped. I was just let me get myself ready. And then when I got here, Instagram became like the next thing. So I would search art shows. I would search curators in New York City on Instagram to find people and look up open calls and start it there. And just started applying with what I had, the work that I had.
Yeah.
And
now you've expanded. You've gotten to do work in the Hamptons. Yeah. I saw that you were at Ma's house.
Yeah, I was at Ma's house.
Tell
Jeremy.
Me about that.
That was my very first residency.
Jeremy really?
Yeah.
What?
Aww. My very first residency. Now I've had like 6 or 7. Jeremy's house was amazing.
Yeah.
I was still a fresh mom. I was still breastfeeding, and I had to wean my kid from breastfeeding in order to take that residency because it was 2 weeks long.
Wait, so she came with you or she didn't?
No, I weaned her for, talk about preparation again, I weaned
you
her.
You can store milk that long?
I stored for, no, well, yes, you can. You can freeze it for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
But my kid, we talked earlier about my kid being a picky eater. She was not fond of frozen milk. Like, it was like, no.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. So it was either fresh or refrigerated for a couple days. But I planned, I said, okay, I want to take this residency. I've never done a residency before.
Yeah.
I feel like this would be a great catalyst for me. So I started preparing maybe like a month or 2 months before the residency and started weaning my daughter slowly so that I could be gone for 2 weeks. And she would be okay. And we did that. I did that. And it was a great experience. I was able to create about 8 pieces while I was there.
And what kind of work was it?
So the first 3 pieces for the In Search of Black Wonderlust series, mixed media portraits. And then I did a full collage series of 3 large collages and framed them. And then I did some smaller like pastels that I would I have these pieces that I never show. But they're,
why?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never, maybe someday in the future it'll be, you know, this is some work I've done that no one's ever seen kind of thing. But I have still lives paintings and like drawings of just like maybe I'm at the beach or maybe I'm sitting in a coffee shop and there's a flower vase in front of me and I just draw these things.
You don't like them or to you?
No, I love them.
Process. Okay.
I just they're for fun. They're for me right now. And because my work, my current work focuses more on people, other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And their stories and their life and their world, I keep the other pieces just, they're for me to create freely. And at some other point in time when I'm like, I just want to change now. Maybe I'll show them and start doing something different. But they're more for me. But I created maybe like 3 or 4 of those while I was there too. So I made a large body of work in 2 weeks. I like used that time. I was like, I'm gonna be away from my kid. I'm gonna be away from the city. But it was beautiful, beautiful experience. I learned a lot about the Hamptons. I learned a lot about
like what? What did you learn?
What was really What has started a new journey for me was learning about the Black population that has been there forever. Yes, like learning about the Shinnecock Nation that's there. The
indigenous, which is where Jeremy lives.
Which is where Jeremy lives on. Which is one of only two indigenous like reservations that exist in New York.
Right. There's another one upstate.
There's another one.
Right. Is it also on the island?
It's also on the island.
Okay.
They're both on the island. But I got to learn about them, of course, but learn about, you know, what happened with the history of the Black people who came over during slavery, who stayed, or those who migrated there in the 30s and 40s during the Great Migration, and why. So learning about their culture and those people who somehow still connect to me and my, you know, learning about others and learning about the history of how Black history and American history coincide.
Yeah.
You hear so much about the Hamptons and the flashiness and the celebrities and the money, but there is a very strong work culture there too. They're the people who do the serving. They're the people who are running the grocery stores, running the cafes, and they are not, you know, Hollywood people.
Right.
So I've become really enthralled with learning about their stories and their heritage, and it's prompted me to go back. I've been to the Hamptons now maybe about 5 times.
Like staying out there or?
Staying and like showing work and, okay. and just experience like different things. Yeah, it keeps pulling me back, so who knows? If you're in the Hamptons, you want a historian and an artist called curator.
How do you feel like it's different out there than in Brooklyn and in Queens and Manhattan?
It's slower.
Yeah.
It's definitely slower. And I love that because it reminds me of the South, honestly. Everyone has cars and trucks and yeah, there are no tall buildings. It's really, really chill. On the water, so nice, just like really peaceful out there. Not all the time, not every season.
Right, summer is popping.
Summer is popping out there, but if you go, you know, in the spring or the fall, oh God, I'm sharing the
like the secrets.
I'm sharing the secrets.
Don't go in those seasons. She definitely didn't mention.
No, I did not say that the fall is the best time to go. Yeah, it's slower for sure. Even when, you know, people are out there, it's still slower than the city. Quieter. What is really cool is that there's a huge arts community. Lots of museums and galleries and that just show amazing work from artists who live there and artists from the city as well. They're pulling people out. They want to show more work from artists in the city. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I've had really just pleasant experiences being out there.
That's good.
Yeah, there's some weird every once in a while, but
there's some very Trumpy parts.
There's some very Trumpy parts. There are some people who look like, you shouldn't be here, or you, like, why are you here, kind of thing. But no one's ever, like, outright disrespected me or made me feel uncomfortable, like, that's in that good. Way. I feel like it's just, like, everywhere else in America.
Yeah.
Where, like, yeah, it feels like everywhere else, except there's a lot of money and a lot of rich people. And you can see it in their the homes and the way that the homes look. Not that they're large, like, you can go down south and see large homes, but they're very, like, high manicured, like, yeah. hedges, and their homes sit very nicely on the beach. Just things you probably wouldn't see everywhere, with, like, a huge gate around mm-hmm. it, you know, and wait staff coming in and out and things like that. But other than that, it's really peaceful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to start wrapping things up.
Okay.
And the word peace made me think of how we're wrapping up this year.
Yeah.
People are starting to reflect on this year, starting to think about 2026. And I'm curious where you are with those kinds of things, like how you felt about this year, and what are some of your hopes and dreams for next year, or at least plans?
This year was both crappy and amazing at the same time. I spent like 6.5 months on Governor's Island, and that was amazing. It was just an experience I'm so grateful for. But then, you know, there's crappy stuff that happens in life. I'm still really grateful. I mean, just for everything this year. And going into next year, I'm hopeful just in general. I'm hoping that we have a better political environment.
I think it's great that you didn't start out with something that was selfish. You were just like, for everyone.
Yeah, no,
this
really
is what I hope.
Because it changes how we interact with each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people, when we're comfortable, we're pleasant with each other. And you can tell that people are afraid right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid. Children are afraid. It's just a very uncomfortable time, not just like here in New York, but everywhere you go throughout the country. It's really uncomfortable. So I'm hopeful that that things will begin to be a little bit more congenial. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I will be the lead curator for Enclave Arts Alliance. That's a really big thing.
You'll be preparing for, I won't even say it because
yeah.
who knows, some kind of public display.
Yes, there will be some kind of public display. A few other, because I've put on so many events and curated so many, I want to call them vibes. but I've put on so many events in the past that I want to do more as far as like art related events with Enclave this upcoming year, but still doing workshops. I love putting on workshops. I love teaching classes. I love learning from other people. So a lot of that. And I don't know. Hopefully I'll get one of those like dream residencies, or hey, if you're a museum and you're looking for cool curator, historian.
Yeah. Well, I hope for all of that and more, Darlene. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank
you for coming to my living room.
It's very nice.
It's the first episode that I've shot here in this particular space.
I think it's nice.
Done with MNN for now. Yeah, I said it. And yeah.
Thank you. And thank you for the coffee.
Yeah, thank you. Who named this fresh roasted coffee? I know I shouldn't be dissing it, but come on, y'all. You need a better name than that. But it tastes good.
It does taste good. It does taste very good.